see everyone back out again this evening. Hope you're still there in Proverbs chapter 8. If you're not, go ahead and turn there. This evening, we're virtually going to be in the book of Proverbs the entire time tonight. Eddie asked me a few weeks ago, I don't remember what he was asking me about, but he said, is the lesson going to be a textual lesson, or is it going to be a topical lesson? You remember, we were in the car one day. I realized that I hadn't done a textual lesson in quite a long time. And you remember, Michael, we started our new quarter theme this past week, I guess it was, a week or so ago, in the first week of April. And this thing, this quarter, as we look at the man in the mirror, we are receiving the engrafted word, the word of God that is in us, and putting that in our life. Well, in the book of Proverbs, wisdom is personified as a woman. And she is crying out in the street. And tonight we're going to talk about what wisdom is crying out to us. And she's going to say, receive my words. And it's easy for us when we hear me and I as we're reading this to read that from God's perspective. Where God says, I'm doing this, I'm speaking this. And I think that's about right. Because what we're talking about is we're talking about godly wisdom. Not wisdom that is from the earth, but wisdom that is from God that people use. So I want you to see here Proverbs 8, as James just read for us. She is in all the places, right? She's where you go into the city. She's where you go out of the city. She's at the crossroads along the way. And she is crying out, hear me. Now what's she crying out with? A loud voice. You know that I'm pretty loud, right? If I'm trying to get your attention, I'm not just probably going to whisper to you. I'm going to shout from the top of my lungs and I'm going to get your attention. And the only way you're not going to hear me is because you choose to ignore me. That's what's happening with her. She's on the rooftops. She's on the hills. She's at the city. Anywhere and everywhere man can go, she's there. For as James says, for all mankind. That's you. That's me. Let's see what she cries out. She cries out in verse 8 about what she's going to say. Listen to my words. And she describes her words in verses 8 through 11. Verse 8. Well, actually, excuse me, 6 through 9. Listen, for I will speak of excellent things. And from the opening of my lips, right things. And from my mouth will speak truth. Wickedness is an abomination to my lips. And all the words of my mouth are with righteousness. And nothing crooked or perverse is in them. They are all plain to those who understand and right to those who have knowledge. She begins by saying her words are excellent, virtuous, they're right. What kind of words do you want people to speak to you? Good words, bad words, right words, wrong words. The best words they can possibly use, it's wisdom. She's giving you the excellent words. And not only that, notice the next thing in verse 7. And notice how verse 7 and verse 8 are written. There is a positive and a negative. I speak truth. You don't want people to lie to you, do you? We hate when people lie to us. That maybe makes us more mad than anything else when somebody lies to us. The wisdom of God does not lie to us. They speak truth. They are truthful words. And notice what they are. Verse 8 there. They're verse 7. They are no wickedness that is coming out of her mouth. Can you imagine God ever saying something that was inappropriate? Can you imagine God ever telling you to do something that wasn't right to do? I sure can't. Why is that? No wickedness comes from his mouth. When God says it, it's true. When God says it, it's excellent. It's right. There's nothing about it. Notice the positive there in verse 8. Is that his words are righteousness. Remember in Romans chapter 1, what has been revealed to men? The righteousness of God has been revealed to men. That the just shall live by faith. How are they supposed to know that the just shall live by faith? It was written down, wasn't it? In the Word there, it was written. God's words are righteous. They tell us about this righteousness. And notice what they are not. They are not crooked or perverse. They are not tainted in any way. They do not set you off in the wrong direction. They are just, verse 9, straight and right. Basically meaning the same thing there with straight and right. These are often the same terms. They're just. They are right words. Now think about that. Who is the person that you listen to the most? Probably varies for each of us. I imagine probably our spouses fit relatively high on that list if you've got a spouse. Or your best friend probably fits pretty high on that list. Why do you listen to them? Because they feed you baloney all the time? Because they make you do worse things? You usually listen to them because when they say it, you think it's a good idea. You think what they're saying is going to be helpful for you. It's going to prove some kind of benefit in your life. And wisdom is saying, everything that I say is beneficial in your life. Let me show you how bad you need my words. Notice how bad you need these words. Receive my, verse 10, instruction and not silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than rubies, and all things one may desire cannot be compared with her. Let me tell you what you need, wisdom is saying. You need my instruction. You need my teaching. You need my knowledge. You need what I have. And you need to seek that more than gold, than silver, and rubies. You know what we spend most of our time going after? Gold, silver, and rubies. That's me. I'm chasing all these other pursuits. You know how much time I spent training for a marathon. I'm chasing all these other pursuits rather than chasing the wisdom of God. Notice how he says it there at the end of verse 11. All things that you may desire cannot compare to her. I want you to think about something that you really wanted. And you got it. Remember how happy you were, how excited you were when you got it? Maybe it was a house, a car, a bag, something that was very special to you. How long did that feeling last of how much you loved that, enjoyed that? Probably faded over time, didn't it? There are some things that are sentimental that will hold on for longer than others. Maybe that house, but you're probably going to sell that house later. And you'll drive by and be like, man, I remember the days when we lived in this house. And that means a lot. And you got what you wanted. But wisdom and the instruction from God is so much greater than that. Because it doesn't leave you. Once you are wise in God's wisdom, and you practice that, you don't lose that as you get older. That doesn't get farther and farther away from your desire as you get older. It in fact gets deeper and deeper and stronger because you see how it has benefited you. And he says, let me tell you what my wisdom is. What is this wisdom that he wants him to get? Notice verse 12. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence and find knowledge with discretion. And here it is. And he says it, I'm going to point this out how he says it in verse 13 and 14. He says it in what he hates and he says it in what he has. This is what this wisdom is. 13. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogance and the evil way and the perverse mouth, I hate. If you want wisdom from God, you better start hating some things. And we better start hating the right things. As in, not the things that are just, not the things that are noble, not the things that are pure, not the things that are of good report, but the things that are evil, the things that are prideful, the things that are arrogant, the things that are boastful, the things that are perverse, hate it. Don't just say, well, I don't approve of that, and you do what you're going to do, and you do what you're going to do. Hate it. You know what you do when you hate a food? You don't eat it. You know what you do when you hate a food? You vomit it up if you do eat it. Or you swallow it down in front of somebody, and then you go away and you spit it out very nicely, all that kind of thing. Because you hate it. The things that we hate are the things that we stay far away from. And can God get much farther away from evil than what He is? He is light, and in Him is no darkness at all. That's why the words that come out of His mouth are all right. They're all just. They're all truth. Because He Himself is all just and all right and all truth. Would you say God is an arrogant God? No. For God so loved the world, as Eddie read this morning, that He gave His third-born son, His firstborn, His beloved son, so that we might believe and we might be saved. Jesus humbled Himself to the point of a servant, even to the death on a cross. You got any arrogance coming out of Jesus' mouth? No. Why do we go after those things? Wisdom of God says, hate those things. Don't think more of yourself, Paul would say to the Romans, than you ought to think. It's okay to think highly of yourself if you're good at something. But it's got to come with that humility with it as well. He hates those things. The wisdom of God hates those things. And notice what the wisdom of God has. Verse 14. Counsel is mine, and sound wisdom. I am understanding, or I have understanding. I have strength. I want to point out three things from that. What he has is he has counsel, sound wisdom, and strength. Now, what is counsel? When we go to our counselors at school, or all those types of things, why do we go to them? To get advice to us, because they have wisdom. They know what needs to be done. They know where we're going. So you go to them to find out what classes you have to take and all that stuff, right? That's their job. Well, who was telling the people of Israel where to go when they were coming out of the land of Canaan? God was. Go take the land. I'm giving it to you. Go. And He was giving them all these directions, and He was guiding them all along all of this. And in Deuteronomy chapter 32, a passage that we keep bringing up, especially in our Wednesday night class, because it is a very important passage, as it is recounting the history of Israel from Moses' perspective that he is being told to tell by the Lord. And you'll see in verse 27 that they were sent off into captivity, or they will be. And he says in verse 28, "For they are a nation void of counsel. Nor is there any understanding in them." They're stupid. They don't know where to go. Verse 29, "Oh, that they were wise, that they understood this." What were they foolish in? What didn't they get? Notice the end of the verse. "That they would consider the latter end. How could one chase 1,000? And two put 10,000 to flight, unless the Lord their rock had sold them and the Lord had surrendered them. These enemies who had defeated them, they're thinking that it's in their might, it's in their power. But they are a nation void of counsel because they don't understand the only reason that they got to defeat God's people was because God gave them to them. So what does that mean to you and me? Can I look around? Do I think too much of myself that I realize that God is not my counselor? Isn't that what Jesus said He was going to be in Isaiah chapter 9? He was going to be a counselor. Who am I thinking about? Where do I get my direction from? Why do I think I'm doing it? I've got to be getting it from God. And sound wisdom, this idea of healthy wisdom, but notice this strength. I have strength. I want you to go to Ecclesiastes 9. I want you to see why I chose Ecclesiastes 9 to tie in with this. Because the writer of Ecclesiastes, who I believe is Solomon, the wisest man to have lived up to that point, he says in verse 13, "This wisdom I have also seen under the sun, and it seemed great to me." So what did he see? Wisdom. And notice what he says. "There was a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it." So what do you got? Small city, very powerful king, and enemy comes against it. And he besieged it. And he built great snares or traps around it. Now in that little city, there was found a poor, wise man. And he, by his wisdom, delivered the city. Yet, no one remembered that same poor man. I want you to picture that just for a second. You've just been saved by this poor, wise man. And you forget all about it. Here's what he says about why this wise man won. Verse 16. "Wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. Words of the wise spoken quietly should be heard, and rather than the shout of fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good." See how powerful he says wisdom is? It's better than, we would say, weapons of mass destruction. We know what kind of damage those things can do, don't we? And what does the wisdom of God have? It has both the wisdom that is better than strength, and it has the strength. What kind of situation do you think that's going to put you in? You're going to be one up on every situation that you find yourself in because you have the wisdom and the strength of God. Well, why would you listen to him? Go back to Proverbs 8. You'd think that might be enough. But he goes on, he's going to give some more reasons about it. And again, Solomon writes here in Proverbs 8, and he's the king. And notice what wisdom says in verse 15 and 16 about her benefits and who she benefited. Verse 15, "By me kings reign, and rulers decree justice. By me princes rule, and nobles, and all the judges of the earth." Who's got me? Wise rulers. Rulers with power, they have me. I'm with them. Notice what he says in verse 17. This is more on a personal level. "I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently will find me." I want us to focus on that for just a moment. What kind of relationship does that paint the picture of? When you have a great relationship between a husband and a wife, right? Both sides are doing things for the other part, aren't they? The wife is trying to please her husband, and the husband is trying to please her wife. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, please his wife. been a long day. Yeah, that would work today, right? They love one another in this relationship. So they're already married, right? For those of us that aren't married, let's step back for a second. Maybe you can go back to the days when you were chasing a lady or a man in your unmarried days. You may be all in to somebody, and you're diligently seeking them, and you're going after them, and so you're trying to find ways to drop hints, and you're trying to find ways to get in situations where you're all together, and you're diligently seeking them. And they're saying, man, I want no part of that. I'm staying as far away from that as possible. That's not the way this relationship works with wisdom. It works in you make an effort to find her, she's going to love you. By the way, where's she at? She's crying out on the streets, and she's crying out on the hills. She's making herself available to you. All you got to do is make a move. She'll love you back. Now, what a situation that is. It's not a one where you enter in, you're afraid, you're worried. But it's one where you know up front what is going to happen when you enter into it. She loves those who love her and who love it. And notice that riches and honor are in her hands. Remember she said, don't go after those things, but rather wisdom, instruction, and all that. But notice in verses 18 to 21, she has those things. Riches and honor are with me, and enduring riches and righteousness. And my fruit is better than gold, yes, than fine gold, and my revenue than the choice silver. And I traverse the way of righteousness, and in the midst of paths of justice, that I may cause those who love me to inherit wealth, that I may fill their treasure. You want to be rich? I'm not talking about financially rich. But you want to be rich? Take this wisdom from God. She'll fill your coffers more than your heart will desire. As we just saw in verse 11. They're with her. Honor is with her. And oh, by the way, kings use her. Riches accompany her. She loves those who love it. But you know who else has her? And who has had her from before the creation of the world? God uses her. God has been there, and she says that she's been there from before the foundation of the world. Notice this, verse 22. The Lord possessed me at the beginning of His way. So you think she knows what's going on? Yep. Before His works of old, I have been established from how long? Everlasting. From the beginning, before there was ever an earth. When there was no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no fountains abounding with water. Before the mountains were settled, and before the hills, I was brought forth. While as yet He has not made the earth, or the fields, or the primal dust of the world. But when He prepared the heavens, I was there. When He drew a circle on the face of the deep, when He established the clouds above, and when He strengthened the fountains of the deep, and when He assigned to the sea its limit, so that the waters would not transgress His command, and when He marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside Him. A master craftsman, and I was His daily delight. God went with him from the beginning. From before the beginning, God possessed him, and I was rejoicing always before Him. Rejoicing in His uninhabited world. A place where you and me and no one else was at. Just Him and wisdom. My delight was in the Son. It's like He wanted to. She wanted to come down and give them what God had. And so she says, if you listen to me, this is what I'll give you. Verse 32. Now therefore, listen to me, children. For blessed are those who keep my ways. Hear instruction and be wise, and do not distinguish. Blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of the door. Does she give us any reason to listen to her? No. And if we do listen to her, you will be blessed. You will be wise. And notice what she says you will find, verse 35 and verse 36, or verse 35. Whoever finds me, and by the way, if you diligently seek me, you will be found. Whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor or grace from the Lord. If you find His wisdom, you found the key to life. You have found life itself. And the Lord is pleased with you. We just spent a whole quarter talking about Psalms about blessed individuals, didn't we? Those who are in favor with God. And we saw all of those blessings. And wisdom says, listen to me, and you'll be blessed. You know what wisdom also says? Not everyone's going to listen to me. If you don't listen to me, notice what she says in verse 36. But he who sins against me wrongs his own soul. And all those who hate me love death. Now you might say, well, I don't know about that. I definitely don't love death. I want to find life. How are we walking around in our life? Are we guiding our own path? Because if so, then we love our own way better than His way. And what we do is we wrong our own soul. We don't bother anybody else. We wrong our own, and we love death. Chapter 1 paints us a better picture about if we don't listen to her. She's cried out in the streets, and she is brought on the scene in chapter 1 and verse 20. Wisdom crawls aloud, and she raises her voice in the open squares, and she cries out in the chief cornerstones at the openings of the gates in the city, and she's saying the same thing. But notice what she says in verse 24. Let's go 23. Turn at my rebuke. Surely I will pour out my spirit on you. Turn to me, I'll give you what is mine. And I'll make my words known to you. Those excellent, right, true, just words, right? But because I have called, verse 24, and you refused, I've stretched out my hand and no one regarded. Because you disdained all my counsel and would have none of my rebuke. This is what I'm going to do. I will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your terror comes. And when your terror comes like a storm and your destruction comes like a whirlwind, when in distress and anguish come upon you, I will laugh in your face. I will make fun of you. You know why? I imagine that's what they did to her. They laughed and they scorned. You'd see that in chapter 3, wouldn't you? Or book of Proverbs. You would see that in all throughout these places. God refuses the proud, but He gives grace to the humble. All these types of things. But notice what is coming. Something that is bad. And He doesn't have sympathy, or she doesn't have sympathy. Because she already tried. And you refused. How many of us want God to be laughing at us when we fall down? And when we're caught in the midst of a tornado and the storm and the whirlwind, won't we want Him there? And when we're in that situation, we'll probably call out to Him. We'll probably seek to Him. But notice what wisdom says right here in verse 28. Then they will call on me, but I will not answer. It's too late. You're already a fool. I can't do anything for you now. And they will seek me diligently, but they will not find me. It's too late. I won't be there. Why? Because they hated knowledge, verse 29, and did not choose the fear of the Lord. Remember what the fear of the Lord was? The beginning of knowledge, 1:9. He just said the fear of the Lord is to hate all evil, the evil way, all of those things back in 8, in chapter 17, chapter 8, verse 17. See how important it is, the way that we live? Is if we don't listen to the wisdom of God, He can sit there and He can say, I'm not coming. But remember what happened earlier for the one that wanted to go to Him, that delighted in going to Him? Loved Him back. But verse 31, you know what? We say this all the time. Have it your way. They say it Burger King. 31. Therefore, they shall eat the fruit of their own way and shall be filled full with their own fancies. You get exactly what you want. You made your path, and your path led to calamity and terror. And I'll wave at you and I'll say, told you so. Now, that doesn't seem like God does. Because we know that God is a forgiving God, and God is a generous God, and God is compassionate and merciful. But isn't there a point where God gives up on somebody? Romans 1. He gave them over. I tell you what. The more we refuse the words of God, the more He's going to sit there and He's going to laugh at us. He's going to say, I was telling you all along. I was crying out on the streets. And you refused to listen. You know how we have to say that from afar off? Men, we recognize this from our class on Friday night. When they are recounting the history in Nehemiah 9 of all of the sin and everything that Israel has done, God, you are just in doing this because of our sin. And we won't have an excuse. But He doesn't close. Remember chapter 8 closed with the negative. Chapter 8 closed if you don't listen. Chapter 1 closes with the positive. Verse 33. But whoever listens to me will dwell safely and will be secure without fear of evil. Not only do we not have to worry about Him not laughing and mocking at us, we don't have to worry about the terror or the calamity. So as I look in the mirror, I think about as I'm going to take the word that is in me, I have to ask myself, am I receiving wisdom of Christ? Do I want to hate evil, to hate pride, arrogance? And do I want to love and all of those various types of things? And am I diligently seeking the wisdom of God? Or am I using my own wisdom, making my own path that will surely lead to calamity and destruction? I think the obvious answer, isn't it? What am I going to do? Let's receive wisdom's cry and let us listen and let us live and let us put into practice the wisdom that God has provided. If you're subject to the invitation this evening, we'd ask that you come now as we stand and as we sit.